Hello and welcome along to Northumberland FA podcast from the sidelines with myself, Gary Middleton, and special guest today, women's national coach developer, Robbie Pringle. Great to have you on board, Robbie.
Yeah, nice to see you guys and looking forward to today.
Yeah, terrific, Rob. Rob, we're going to look at transition and counter-attacking today, but for everyone listening in who maybe doesn't know yourself, Rob, can you just explain to everyone your current role at EFA and what that entails?
Yeah, no worries. And yeah, looking forward to this, guys. And thanks for having us on, first and foremost. As you mentioned, Robbie Pringle, my role is Women's National Coach Developer for the National FA. Very simply, my job's kind of split 50% supporting coaches, specifically in the women's and girls game, on qualification. So supporting them on their A licence through course delivery down at St George's Park and then through the in-situ process where we come out and see them in their clubs delivering coaching sessions. And then the other 50%, again, specifically within the women's and girls game, is off qualification. So it's beyond A licence and supporting coaches who've already got their A licence and what that might look like in terms of their development beyond the qualification. And we then work with coaches that are within the WSL Women's Championship and then the professional game academies, which is the equivalent of the boys academy and the girls games. And we sometimes touch on some of the coaches working in Women's National League. So yeah, that's my role, specifically women and girls game and working in coach development.
Brilliant. Thanks for that, Rob. Rob, so we're chatting around transition and counter-attacking today. But what's the difference between the two?
Right. Yeah, really good question to start off with. I guess where I go with this first, guys, is just talking about my role, and I'll get round to answering your question in a second. So first of all, our job is to try and, I think in a really simple way, is try and getting coaches to be able to break the game down and be able to break the game down into different component parts for them to have real clarity and understanding of the game, to then be able to communicate that in a way that supports their players' learning, development and performance. So that sounds really simple, right? Just trying to break the game down. Like, there you go, break it down in possession, out of possession, transition, counter-attacking, et cetera, et cetera. But you and I know, and the people who are listening into this will know, that the game's so complex. So if we boil it down to the simple one, you've got a team playing against another team that's trying to get territorial advantage to try and score on the opponent's goal whilst trying to stop them scoring our goal. But the complexities then come in around different phases of the game, different moments of the game, the different technical actions that are involved in the game, the decision-making process, the player capabilities, all of that stuff is just like makes the game such a, first of all, a fascinating watch, but also quite a complex and a dynamic game to be able to then coach. So coming back to what I said before, I think the skill in coaching is trying to isolate and trying to break down the game into those different components as a coach to better understand that, to then be able to present in a way that helps the players. So I'm sure people on the podcast who are listening in will have a familiarity with kind of the different moments in the game. So you've got in possession at the top, and then you've got out possession at the bottom. And then to kind of complete the circles, you've got in possession to out of possession, which would be ball lost or negative transition. And then you've got kind of ball, sorry, out of possession, in possession, where you've got kind of ball won, which is positive transition. So there's your different four components. But maybe it's moving sideways from that. You've also got just possession starts in general. So if we talk about possession starts, you've got five structured possession starts, which we'll all be aware of. So you've got your kickoff, you've got your goal kick, you've got your corner kick, you've got your free kick, and you've got your throw-in. And then you've got one unstructured possession start, which is then your transition, which, as mentioned before, kind of fits between those two moments of in possession and out possession. Either we regain the ball or we lose the ball. So we have a game insights team who have they do a really good job at presenting us with data and insight from the game to help us then work with coaches. And they've provided a definition of transition being an event at the start of a team's recovery of possession from open play. For a transition to happen, the team in possession must have the opportunity to have full control of the ball, and this then starts a new passage of play. So that kind of summarizes what transition is and linking that between ball, like in possession and out possession. So if I can just spotlight some of the terms in there. So first and foremost, it starts from a recovery of possession. So that can happen in a number of different ways, and we'll probably talk about that a little bit later on in the podcast. For it to happen, you must have full control. So it's not that scenario where I take the ball off you guys and then you give it back to me and then I give it back to you. That kind of ping pong that sometimes happens in the game. We have to have control, and by having control, a new passage then starts. So that might be me taking the ball off you, me traveling with the ball into space. It might be me taking the ball off you and then making a pass to keep the ball, and then a sequence of passes then happen from there. It might be me having the ball and trying to pass forward really early, but all of that under control. So that would be transition. And then if we further try and break transition down, linking back to my point before of trying to break the game down into different component parts, we've then got counterattacking happening within that ball won. Now, you'd like to think that every time we win the ball that we'd be able to counterattack, right? That would be a really great position for us to be in. But we know that sometimes that can't be the reality. So I win the ball off you again, guys. I'm not facing the goal that I'm trying to attack. I might have a lot of pressure coming from you immediately. I might not have the support of my teammates. We might be outnumbered. It might be a different state of the game. So we might be 1-0 up and just trying to protect the lead. So it might not actually be a situation where we want to counterattack. But all of those positive transitions of us winning the ball back might present a chance for us to be able to counterattack. So again, our game insights team have provided us with a definition of, and bear with us on this one, guys and listeners, because it's quite a long-winded one, this. So, but really comprehensive, by the way. So a counterattack is a fast and direct attack occurring from a transition and consisting of minimal passes with the purpose of creating a goal-scoring opportunity before the opposition can recover in an organised defensive shape. Yeah. So really thorough, really comprehensive, and I'm going to go back into it to try and pick some of the key bits out of it. So fast and direct, so that idea of trying to move the ball quickly and work at speed. It occurs from a transition, linking back to what we just said around when we win the ball back, there's an opportunity there or might be an opportunity there to counterattack. It consists of minimal passes, so trying to be efficient with how we progress the ball forward up the pitch and trying to move the ball forwards. Sometimes that might involve trying to travel with the ball or move with the ball. The purpose of creating a goal scoring opportunity, so actually the end product at the end of it, is really important. And then that idea of before the team get to recover the shape, so that situation, the 11v11 game that we sometimes see of a team trying to build the attack, they've got a really full expansive shape, so forwards high and wide, you've got the defensive line nice and high and wide, you've got lots of depth between the front line and the first line, and we win the ball back and we try and exploit the spaces that they've left from that expansive shape. So yeah, that's kind of the difference between the two, but the connection between the two and equally the different moments across the game.
Robin, that'll look very different in the different formats of the game.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think first and foremost, the formats also kind of infers the different ages. So naturally, from 5v5 to 11v11, you've got different ages that play the game, and with those different ages potentially come some different stages, right? So you know, if 5v5 with a group of under sevens, you know, the technical quality and proficiency of the players you would expect might be a little bit lower than a group of under 14s, under 15s, right? So the ability to control the ball, the ability to receive the ball, the ability to pass the ball might mean that the length of possession is shortened because of the less control that those players might have in the different elements that keep possession. So you'll get that natural transition that happens quite frequently in 5v5. So I would encourage coaches, maybe working that age group, that like there is going to be a lot of transition, and that is going to happen quite organically in the game. And that's not something that you should get frustrated with. It's actually something you can embrace and work with your players on to get better at, and being able to counterattack and play forward quickly. And then as we go through the ages and stages, you would hope that the technical proficiency of the players would improve, and all of a sudden you get passing sequences getting put together. So the frequency of transition will probably drop a little bit as we move through those different age groups. What you've then got to add in there is the change in numbers and the size of the pitch. So as we've got the different numbers, you might see different scenarios and what you'll see transition looking like. So overloads, underloads, matched up. And then if you add in the layer around the different dimensions of the pitch, so where does it occur? Does it occur high up the pitch near the opponent's goal? Is it occurring near your own goal? So actually the counter-attack is that real traditional counter-attack from back to front. You might find the size of the pitch and the different physical capabilities of the player when transition happens. It might be from aerial balls, something that you might not see quite as often in the lower age groups. So yeah, there'll be a combination of different factors from the technical proficiency of the players, the size of the pitch and the numbers in the game that'll make transition look different in terms of where it happens, how it happens and why it happens. And then I guess the other bit would be, as we work up towards those older age groups, there's probably different various strategies and tactics that coaches will use to try and win the ball back. So when they're playing in a mid block or they're playing in a high press, so actually where and how they try to win the ball might be really structured and actually really intentional. Yeah. Whereas in the lower age groups, it might just be a little bit more free flowing and a little bit more organic.
Hmm. Rob, how can we encourage these themes to occur within our coaching practices for us to get better at that?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, guys, I don't think we necessarily need to encourage it sometimes, because it might just naturally happen in the game. And and within certain types of practices, and this is probably the point where we draw the distinction between opposed and unopposed practices. And this isn't saying which is better or worse, because we'd probably be here all day having that conversation and people would have various opinions on that. But in a real simple sense, I think unopposed and opposed practices fit within coaching and they've both got a right of place. It's just how and where you use them and what you want to get out of your practices, right? But In this conversation, when we're talking about transition, you won't get transition from unopposed practices, very simply, because you haven't got a team taking the ball off another team. So the transition just won't occur. So if you're trying to put the spotlight or you're trying to work on transition with your players, it has to come from opposed practices. And again, that's not devaluing unopposed practices, because you can still get different things out of those types of practices. But specifically around transition, if we want to work on transition with our players and give them opportunities to deal, manage, play within transition, that opposition is really key. And if we do have those oppositional elements within the practice, transition will just naturally happen. So that'll give us a chance to potentially work on it with our players. So if we think about it in those terms, and that might be a 1v1, that might be a 2v2, it might be a 3v3, it might be a technical practice, it might be a phase of play, it might be a skill game, it might be a way of practice, it could be all sorts of different types of practices. Wherever we've got a position, there will be a chance to focus on or help the players deal with the managed transition. The other side of the coin would be, can we, should we, and how do we then engineer more transition to happen in our practices if we want to really focus on that as part of our coaching, which might be a choice for you as a coach, that you've seen that's a gap in the learning of the players, that actually we want to help them be a little bit better at transition. So to increase the opportunities of transition to happen, we've got to start looking at our practice design and management techniques. So what does the pitch size and shape look like that might encourage more transition to happen? So personally, and this is just a personal view, I always quite narrow pitches and trying to reduce the size of pitches. And as we reduce the size and we narrow stuff off, you're going to increase the opportunities for transition to happen. Now, the tipping point on that is how narrow and how small do we make it to still allow some kind of structure within the game? Because if it just ends up being ping pong, then I'm sure the players will get very frustrated in that, and it probably won't give us much structured stuff to work off. So definitely want to think about the size and the shape of the pitch to bring out more transition. If we then start to layer in some considerations around team and individual constraints, so what constraints can we put on the players within the practice that might bring out more transition to happen? So one that I like to use sometimes, if we're just doing, say, a small-sided game, is putting a team on a maximum amount of touches. So if you put the team on 10 team touches, let's say, they've got to try and score within those 10 team touches, which kind of increases the speed at which they try to play, which then brings in probably more forced play, which then brings in transition. So you're not taking away the natural flow of the game because you're still giving them some decision making around how they use those 10 team touches. So I might dribble, I might pass, I might just shield the ball if I'm in that situation. But it is encouraging them to play forward a little bit quickly or a little bit quicker than what they would in the natural game, which then might encourage a bit more transition to naturally happen. And then the other one would be, how do you manipulate different possession starts? So, and the rules that you have within the game. So instead of it going out from a throw-in and actually we're dealing with a structured possession start, might you just drop a ball into open play that then brings out a little bit more of the transitional bit of two player, then go to try and win the ball back in open play. So there's a few different strategies that we can just try and engineer within our practices to bring out more repetition for sure.
Terrific, Rob. Yeah, great. Rob, to create opportunities to be able to counterattack, we need to win the ball back. What things could coaches and players focus on to be able to win that ball back more successfully?
Yeah, no, great question. I think I'd start here with whatever age group that you're working with, the core skills that are necessary to win the ball back. So whether that be intercepting, whether it be pressing, whether it be challenging, your complementary kind of defensive skills around marking and covering and how we set up and make the connections between the player that's engaging the ball and then the second defender, third defender, etc. Like, what core skills do we want to focus on to help our players to be able to win the ball back? So the game's changed, right? Like, well, not sure our age on this call, but we can both probably remember the times where striker receives back to goal and a centre back could just go straight through the back of the player into the ball, and that would be fair as long as they came out with the ball. But the game's evolved over a number of years where less physical contact, less robustness, and you have to be a little bit clever around how you win the ball. Kind of 50-50 challenges aren't as frequent as we've seen in the scenario that I just talked about before. We just don't see because of the laws of the game. So we now in the modern game see a lot of kind of intercepting, people being savvy around when they step in to win the ball, really trying to entice players to play passes that they know they're going to try and pinch. So I think, yeah, those intercepting skills are really key. I still think there is that 1v1 pressing challenge and stuff that's really important. So think about your fullback in those 1v1 duels, a centre back that's up against a striker, your centre midfield matchups, and how you then are clever in trying to take the ball off a direct opponent. So that would be my first start point. Regardless of the age, I think there's always times that we can start to try and develop those skills, refine those skills, or maintain those skills at what depend on which stage the players are at. So again, thinking from a coach's point of view, what the needs of your players like, and which core skills might you focus on to best help them. As we start to move up towards more like 11v11 type formats, you not might start bringing in the strategies and tactics that coaches might use to try and win the ball back. So we're seeing different trends and different styles that kind of come in that evolve with the game. Like, so at the moment, from a defensive strategy, and we'll probably see a lot of this season in the women's game and potentially in the men's game. And we saw it in the Women's Olympics, and we saw it in the men's Euros this summer around teams setting up with a mid block with a 4-4-2. I think you'll probably see a lot of that at the top end of the game. Now, that's not to say that everybody has to run away and go and do 4-4-2 mid block, but what out of possession strategy do you want to adopt as a coach that's best going to be able to allow you to win the ball back? And two things that I always talk about when working with coaches: where do you want to win the ball and how do you want to win it? And that always comes back to your own player capabilities around where your strengths might be out of possession. So yeah, just that consideration around the types of strategies and tactics that you want to employ as a coach that are best going to give you the chance of winning the ball, whether that's high up the pitch, whether it's lower down the pitch, whether you're setting traps into central areas, or whether you're trying to set traps into wide areas. Just that consideration as a coach around your strategies and tactics.
Rob, the modern game, we see within counter-attack and involving teams trying to exploit space by playing through, around, and over. Your thoughts around that?
I guess we're talking principles of play, right? So the principle of the
Absolutely.
player, principles of player being around for decades, haven't they, in terms of the principles that underpin the game itself. And coaches probably interpret them in different ways to try and develop their own team principles, but they'll be underpinned by the principles of play themselves. So we talk about penetration, creating space, movement, support, and creativity is the five core principles of play, with penetration being that first and foremost one around trying to progress the ball and score goals. That's what the game boils down to, right? From an in possession point of view. So if we then looked at penetration and what you introduced there around those three areas, do we try and go through teams? So trying to exploit gaps in between units and between players. Do we try and go around through the width that we have? Or do we try and go over a defensive line if that defensive line is potentially quite high? And I think what it always comes back to, guys, and touched on this a little bit earlier on, is what capabilities do your players have, and how do you look to use them to their best ability? So if we give an example of that, if you've got a player, a number nine who's really quick, and you've maybe got a number nine who's up against two centre backs that are reasonably slow, then the threat might be trying to play beyond and trying to play over. So your first thought as the player who regains the ball, if we've got the nine in a good position, is can we play above and beyond that back line to utilize the number nine's strength? If we maybe haven't got a number nine or any front players who are a bit quicker, but we've got a number 10 that likes to get in little pockets and pick up the ball on the half turn, then when we win the ball back, our first thought might be, can we try and find the 10? And that might be trying to play through and trying to exploit those little gaps in between midfield players. And then from a round point of view, we've got a quick winger who likes to get support from the fullback. So all of a sudden, we're starting to think about trying to get the ball in that wide area and exploit that 1v1 situation, or even a 2v1 if the fullback gets up and join them. So I think always that comes back to knowledge of your own player capabilities and how you try and utilize those capabilities to the best effect within the counter attack. And I guess the added layer is, regardless of what your go-to strategy or tactic might be, it doesn't mean to say that that's exclusive. So yes, we might have a number nine that can threaten the back line, and that might be our go-to strategy and tactic, but recognizing the situation is important. So we win the ball back and our quick nine isn't on the back line because of where that moment's just happened. They're a little bit deeper, but we've got a seven in a wide area and the fullback hasn't marked them well. So we try and hit the seven, the winger, and we try and get the winger in. So there's always one there for me where the go-to strategy and tactic might be established, but recognizing the situation as a player, what is the right decision and what is the right action in that moment is really critical, and something I think we can try and encourage with the players as we work with them. What is the scenario? What's the situation? And ultimately, what's the best option to try and launch that counter-attack?
Rob, when we look at the six capabilities, how do they link in with counter-attacking?
Yeah, so I don't know whether you've had people talk about the six capabilities before on your podcast, and even in some of the CPD events, I'm sure they have. But just as a recap for those that maybe haven't picked up those previous podcasts, the six capabilities is a framework that we have within the FA that just gets coaches trying to think about observing players in relation to key technical areas. So we have six areas around positioning, scanning, timing, movement, techniques, and deception. So if you put the spotlight on any individual player at any time, you could watch them using those six areas and try and analyze their game and potentially identify some areas that they might need to get better at. So is their positioning not quite good enough, and is that something that we could potentially work on to just help them around? When do they position themselves in front of a defender? When do they position themselves behind a defender, et cetera, et cetera? So we can definitely link that into counterattacking as well. So if we again try and break it down, which is what this framework's trying to do, and how we can work as coaches to try and present that to players, best way might be thinking of a scenario. So let's think of a midfielder. Let's think the opposition centre back stepped out with the ball and they're trying to build the attack. So they've stepped into midfield and midfielder's managed to nick it off the centre back. Yeah. So the midfielder's nicked the ball off the centre back who's stepping in. And in that moment, if we just paused it, the nine's in like a 1v1 ahead of them against the other centre back. And we've got the player on the ball who's just won it with the potential of breaking the space. We've got an opportunity as a 2v1. So if we look at the player on the ball, we've got to start thinking about, are they scanning? Are they seeing what's happening in front of them? Are they connecting the ball with the player off the ball and being able to spot what the nine's doing? Have we got the timing of when they release the ball? Yeah, so if I do start traveling with the ball, what is the right time for me to actually play to the nine? Or do I not play to the nine? So the centre-back actually stays with the nine and I'll just go myself. But when the centre-back does step towards me, I might play around the centre-back to be able to get the nine in. We're then starting to think about your techniques that you use. So my running with the ball technique, how close do I have the ball? But actually, I probably want quite big touches to be able to exploit the space so the recovering centre-back can't get the ball off us. My technique around when I pass it. So it might be that front foot pass that is quite late, but gets the ball released quite quickly. It might be a back foot pass where I try and draw the defender in a little bit more. And then we're already starting to talk about deception, right? So I might pretend to play one way and I play to the nine and actually I just go myself. Or I pretend to go myself and I play it into the nine and we're in 2v1 and we're in on goal. So that would be the player on the ball. If we then shifted the focus to the player off the ball, i.e. the nine, we've then got the positioning of the nine to connect with the player on the ball so that they don't go beyond the offside line. So I've got to position myself in line with that centre back. I've got to scan, similar to what the player on the ball had to do, but I've got to scan and connect with the player on the ball around when they're ready to pass it. I've got to scan and keep an eye on where the defender is. So again, I don't go offline. I've got my timing of my movement if I do run beyond the defender to receive the pass. I've got my movement where I might have to arc my run to stay online, onside. The quickness of my sprint to be able to receive the ball. And then hopefully when we do get in on goal, you've got your techniques around finishing. Do I use a bit of deception to pretend to go one way, go another to finish past the goalie? So there's like a practical example of how all of those things can be mixed into that just one scenario. But think about that in all of the different scenarios that we might have in a counter-attack and how you might help players work on different things at different times.
Yeah, Rob, what practices look like to develop players that are better at counter-attacking?
Yeah. Whenever we talk about practice design type stuff, guys, I think it always comes back to the three R's. So relevance, realism, repetition. Try not to stray too far away from those things, because if we can anchor ourselves as coaches in those things, it'll really help us develop our practice design. So I guess starting with relevance and going back to the bit that we talked about earlier on, players are at different ages and at different stages of their development. So recognizing what's relevant to them at that time is really critical. So, you know, we've talked about some higher end strategies, tactics stuff, but we're working with a group of under sevens, under eights, as an example, we might just want to start with some 1v1 type stuff. So me and you playing 1v1, can I try and win the ball and quickly break away from you before you try and recover the ball off us? And we're starting to build that traveling with the ball, moving with the ball under control, wrapping in the six capabilities around me movement, me scanning, where am I trying to run towards? And then as we progress through the age groups, we're starting to layer on some more complex aspects. So if we get up towards 15, 16, 17s, 18s, it might be working on players playing longer passes over 30, 40 yards to, going back to that scenario before, use the nine speed to run beyond the back line. So I think that relevance of really understanding where your players are at and trying to pitch practices that cater to their needs at that specific moment in time is a real skill. How you build that up over a period of time to layer the learning is really critical. And then if we look at realism, going back to the stuff that we said, we talked about really early on the podcast, the game is simple in the sense of it's two teams and two goals with one ball. So we want the realism. That is the real bits that we now need to try and include. So two teams, one ball, two goals, or at least two target zones or directional stuff that we're trying to work towards would be a core element that I would try to involve. Then if we start to look at the types of numbers that we bring into the practice, like what is real, and we'll talk about this stuff in a second when we start talking about the face-to-face event, but when we pause, if we could pause the game, which we know we can't do, but if we pause the game in the moment of transition with a counter-attack opportunity being realistic, what numbers are involved frequently? And are we providing the players with the right type of opportunities in terms of the numbers that they face? Mm-hmm. So is it 3v2 and overload in our favour? Is it 2v2? Is it 3? Is it 3v3? Is it actually we're underloaded in that situation and we're 3v4? So a real appreciation of the numbers that we include in our practices. And then I guess the last one would be around, and again, when we're starting to work towards the bigger numbers formats of the game, is what does your pitch geography look like? And what does the size of the pitch look like to bring out the most realistic returns that you want to? So are we doing stuff that's counter-attacking near the opponent's goal in and around the 18-yard box, as in we've won the ball quite high up the pitch? Do you want to position it more in the middle area of the field? Do you want to position it a little bit deeper so we've got full-length counter-attack type stuff? So, yeah, realism would be key based on where you see counter-attacking being most important for your players. And then the last one is repetition, and this goes back to what we spoke about earlier in terms of trying to engineer more repetition within your practices. So, again, repeating what was mentioned earlier, you know, you're going to get transition, and if you get transition, you might have potential counter-attack opportunities from having opposed practices. If you can then engineer more repetition through the stuff that we talked about before in terms of the size and the dimensions of the pitch, the constraints that you put on the teams and individuals, and also layered in there in terms of how you manage the transition through your possession starts, dropping balls in, etc., you might actually bring out more repetition of the counter-attack opportunities happening. But I think the last thing I would say on that one, guys, would be, as long as you've got that opposition element within your practice, you could easily build counter-attacking into the natural organic counter-attack opportunities that just happen in there. It's how you then shine the light on that as a coach, if you want to shine a light on that as a coach.
Yeah, fascinating, Rob. Fascinating. Rob, just to wrap up, you're coming to Northumberland FA for one of our coach events to deliver this topic. For people listening in, what can we expect to see on the night?
Well, I hopefully haven't stole all my material for the night, which I've been really conscious of, that I've tried to give everybody enough on the podcast without spoiling all the fun of the time that we'll spend for the face-to-face stuff. Because what we will present in something that hasn't been included in this podcast, which just gives you a bit of a flavour for some of the things that we will be going into. We've got loads of data and insight from the previous Women's Euros and from the Women's Super League. So I mentioned the Game Insights team. They provide us with lots of data and really fascinating information that we'll be sharing and presenting some of that information on the night. So you'll get a real insight into that top level of the game, of some of the trends and some of the underpinning data of what transition and counter-attacking looks like at that top level. What will be really important on the night, based on all of that information, is trying to encourage the coaches to think about what it looks like in their own context. So we're presenting some information and some insight from the top levels of the game, but actually what are the implications for you in your own format of the game with your group of players, whether that be 5v5, 7v7, 9v9, 11v11, whether you're working with a group of girls, whether you're working with a group of boys, whether you're working with real beginners, whether you're working with more advanced players, just trying to translate that into some coaching implications for you. And then the last bit that we'll be trying to do is trying to bring that to life on the pitch. So based on the data and insight and trying to connect that back into your own environment, what might be some practices that you could deliver that would allow your players to develop their counter-attacking skills, essentially. So yeah, that's kind of in a nutshell what we'll be doing on the night for the face-to-face event.
Fantastic. I'm really looking forward to seeing you. For that, and many thanks for giving up your time today on From the Sidelines and having a chat with you. Always a great listen, Rob. Love chatting with you. And thanks very much.
Brill, thanks, guys. Really enjoyed it. And thanks for your time. And again, thanks for having us on.